Hi, I'm Dave Schwartz from PaceMakesTheRace.com. Remember me? Blue shirt, geeky headset, better sound quality now, but always good handicapping information. And yes, I know this is a podcast and you can't hear me, but I haven't done one of these in so long, I figured I'd make sure you recognize me. So today I have a really special guest. He's a longtime friend. And he's got quite a story. I'd like to introduce Tony Kofalt, or as I call him, Tony the K.
Dave, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Tony is a professional player for what? Well, it's pretty much, well, you've been a winning player as long as I've known you, right?
Yeah, I started to win probably in the mid-90s. For the last just about 12 years now, I've been doing it professionally.
And defining professionally as what?
Professionally, is basically my income is generated through betting horses. Okay. My income is generated through betting horses.
Okay. And take a moment and share your story. I mean, when I met you, gosh, I remember it really well. Doing a seminar in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And back then, well, you did the whole public selector in the newspaper thing, right?
Right. In the early 90s, our local newspaper, the Patriot News in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, just close to Penn National Racecourse, had an opening for a graded handicapper, a graded selections handicapper. The sports editor actually knew me pretty well and asked if I would be interested because we spent a lot of time at the track together. And I said, I don't want a full-time gig because I actually had a full-time job at the time working in the utility industry. So we were able to work out some terms where I was the person to put together graded selections on a daily basis for the track. And kind of proud to say that lasted about 14 years roughly. And we were able to demonstrate through record keepings that we managed to have about 33% win rate on our top pick, 48% win rate on our best bet every day, and we were actually slightly positive on an ROI through that entire period.
You know, one of the things I remember about you, and I've used this as an example for all the time in seminars and stuff since I first met you, but the story is when I ask a player, are you a winning player? As a general rule, they will tell me that they had a good day or they had a good week or they did this or the, but the real winning players always say definitively, yes, I'm a long-term winner. But you were very special because I'd say, so how are your results in the newspaper? And you would say, well, my last 1,000 bets, right?
Yes, that's true.
And how did that go? I mean, for years, what were your results on those last 1,000 bets?
Well, the results were basically, from an ROI perspective, slight positive, like maybe 2%. Mm-hmm. But picking a horse and picking a winner in every race, we were picking on about 33% winners.
Yeah.
Those results were I'm proud of those results. And they kind of proved to me that maybe being the races could be done. But it was a lot of fun.
Well, I do remember that. You took it semi-seriously. I mean, dead serious about the picks and all that. But you did not seem to be, frankly, so full of self that, you had a family, that you had kids that were growing and so forth. It was a different situation. But what always impressed me, and for the audience out there, I'm not kidding. Every time I talk to Tony, I'd say, give me the number. And he would say, well, it would always be the same. And this is the model of, if you had a winning player to talk to, it might not be his last 1,000 bets, but you're going to get some kind of strong answer about results and pretty definitive. Wouldn't you agree with that, or do you see something different?
No, I do agree. I think, you know, in order to really know how well you're doing and how well you're performing, you have to keep track of it, keep score. And I still keep score today. I can tell you over the last so many bets, how many sessions I've lost, ROI, dollar net I work with anymore for the most part. But I believe we have to track what we're doing. And that to me is the validation if I need to look to make any changes or not.
Okay. Can you describe your approach to the game?
Sure. First of all, I want to say that probably Dave and I have been friends, and I've probably bought most every product he's had since 1990 or so. Mm-hmm. But I think that the most important thing I've learned from Dave is betting in sessions. He had a couple of early betting methods that he sold, and I think there's probably still for sale.
Yes, they are.
First marketing investment, I think, and the opponent method. Mm-hmm. And I was most intrigued when I read the opponent method, but each of those two came with an explanation of the power behind session wagering. And I've built my game around, not as far as handicapping, but I've built my wagering game around sessions. I have a dedicated, as I think everybody who's serious about the game needs to have, a dedicated bankroll for gambling.
Sure.
I keep 5% of that in action at any given time. I call it a session, 5% of my sessions. So I actually have enough capital to run through 20 sessions of wagering. Mm-hmm. And I use a soft progression betting method within the sessions.
You mean chasing a little bit?
Yes. I don't want to say chasing, but some people, you know, some folks believe in maybe stepping up your wagers when you're on a winning streak. Mm-hmm. I do a little bit the opposite of that. When I lose bets, I have an algorithm that I follow to describe when to step up, but I'll step up from 1 unit to 2 units. Mm-hmm. You're betting 2 units to 3 units. And in some cases, unfortunately, you know, I will lose my entire session. And then I have to start over again at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Go ahead, Dave.
No, I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. I do the same thing, of course. I'm an amateur player. I'm a recreational player. I mean, but I still use sessions. In fact, I don't know if you do this, but I keep a session win percentage. Do you do that?
I do as well. Over the past couple of years, my session win percentage dropped a little bit. It's about 72% session wins right now. So losing basically 3 out of 10 sessions, but winning 7 out of 10. And I play the session until all the money's gone, or until I double the bankroll.
Do you find, obviously you don't like I play small sessions, $300 a pop, and my minimum bet is $30. And as I'm playing, sometimes I progress. I don't wanna spend our time on that. But what I find is that my average win in a session is about like 7 to 5 on the money. And when I lose, because of the way I scrape money off, that's what calls it. As I scrape money off, when I lose, I typically do not lose a full session. It's more like I lose about 80% of the $300. So it's kind of like betting $80 and when I win, I get 140, and when I lose 80. Does yours kind of work out the same, similar fashion?
As my winning, I primarily play horizontal exotics. Pick fives. So when it's very unlikely that when I win a session, it's close to the doubling amount. It's double plus something.
Right.
And it turns out to be about 17% above double.
Okay.
Average. Dollar Net's running about 334 right now, maybe.
$3.34. So we're talking about an advantage of 67 cents per wagered dollar.
That is correct, Dave.
Wow. Wow. So that must mean that your the volatility is what hurts you. That's the bottleneck, isn't it? I mean, in other words, you're getting long enough prices that you are, sometimes you will hit dry spells. Yes?
Absolutely. I think that the, my recollection, the longest losing streak I've had in the last maybe 5 years has been three sessions. Mm-hmm. And I did end up winning the fourth session, but I had lost three consecutive sessions, which is a bit unusual, but it happened. And I was almost through the fourth session, and I pulled out a win in the fourth session. One thing that's kind of surprised me a little bit when I went back and looked at my records last year, I only really had about 35 sessions last year. They were very long. We had some very good wins at the end of the sessions, but they were very elongated sessions. And I'm not quite sure why. It took me a while to win the sessions, but I was able to do it.
In my experience is I've never lost more than three in a row. I did actually lose three a couple of years ago. And when that happened, it wasn't just that I lost. Do you ever get like you're in a play, in a session, and you find that it's like you're handicapping the wrong races? Your horses are just, they just never got a call, or they really weren't in the race. Do you experience that sometimes?
Absolutely. And one of the things I realize, this is just one of the hazards of betting pick threes, pick fours, and pick fives, is sometimes I may like a race or two in the sequence, but may have strong opinions on the other races. Mm-hmm. Yet sharing the cost of the ticket. So I do find there are times when I don't do maybe as good a job in some of those races that don't stand out to me. And, you know, one thing I try to do is I try to review every race after the race to see who won, why they won, why I didn't have it. 1-2 minutes a race. But I try to go back and review each winner to see if there was anything I missed or anything I could do. But the scenarios where you can get very cold, especially for me, are those races where I just may not have a strong opinion.
Okay. Hey, how many tracks do you typically play?
Two.
Okay. Okay.
I play New York very religiously.
Well, you know, gambling of any kind can be a religious experience. I mean, how many times have you heard guys saying, "Oh God, I need this," you know?
One time.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I play New York every day they run. I play Penn National, which is my home course, but I have to be very careful about Penn National because you can't bet nearly to the extent that you can bet in New York. So that has some impact on the way I wager at Penn National. And they're really the two tracks I focus on.
Mm. Okay, and so you're still pushing money through the window that's way above my level. I mean, when I've had partnerships in the past, of course, the partnerships have pushed big money through the windows, but that's not me. Question, do you find that the game has changed quite a bit in the last few years?
Absolutely. The game's changed in a number of ways, I think, especially, you know, I started in 1975 using Andy Byers' figures and then creating my own and making my own variants every day, et cetera. Probably the same as most of your customers, most of your clients have it as well. Some of the biggest changes, I think, to the game, though, have come in the form of computer wagering, the whales that have gotten involved from that perspective. I think it's changed the game a lot because While the game has continued to grow in some cases and then shrink in other cases, the business model for these ADWs within the game, I think, has really hurt the fundamentals of horse racing.
I agree. I completely 1980s,
most every bet was made on track. There was a contracted amount of money that went to horsemen, a contracted amount of money that went to the state. The rest of the money was split back between the winners. Now horsemen find themselves in a position where many times, instead of 9 cents on the dollar, I can be sitting in Penn National's grandstands and I can make a bet through New York Bets that if I bet it at Penn National, 9 cents go to the horsemen. If I bet it through New York Bets, about 1.5 cents goes to the horsemen.
Right.
And that has that business model. The foresight wasn't there, I think, when original contracts were hammered out. It was viewed as, well, this is just going to be additional money, not viewing the day where everybody can bet on the phones, not thinking, not having the foresight to see that. I think that's probably the biggest, that and takeout, I think, are the biggest two obstacles that the industry has to work on over the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, okay, in my own experience, I would just mention this. To me, the biggest impact, I think the electronic wagering has been a wonderful thing because it's opened up markets. But I think the impact of having a small handful of people, whales, at the top of the food chain, I think it is, and they are very tough players. I think it's made the game a lot harder.
It has. It's certainly these guys, the whales, the millions of dollars that are bet into betting pools through their organizations, they're making intelligent plays. it has made our job a little harder, and my handicapping routine has probably been tweaked. Probably every few months, I make small tweaks. I have a definite organized approach to the game. But there are times when I have to consider, am I putting too much emphasis on this factor, not enough emphasis on this, on a different factor. One thing that has that I'm not as upset. I know I see a lot of comments being made on some of the horse racing forums about odds changing at the last minute. I'm not as upset about that because for the most part, I can predict that when I look at the will pays for doubles, pick threes, et cetera. I know the horses, they almost create a line, a betting line through the will pays. And pretty predictably, if I watch the double pay will pays, watch the pick three will pays, I can predict the odds are reasonably close to what the horses are going to go off at. So if the horse is sitting at 3-1, that has a will pay that indicates 7-5, I know 3-1 is probably not going to hold up. And at the last minute, that horse is going to end up at 2-1, 8-5, something in that area. So I don't get quite as riled up about that as some of the players do.
Now, let me ask you this. When it comes to the actual handicapping process itself,
yes,
would you share a little bit? I mean, I'm not asking you, of course, to give away the secrets, but...
No, there are really no secrets, and I'll be glad to share what I do. First thing, when I approach a race, the first thing I do is I read the conditions of the race. I still feel they're very important. Trainers, good trainers, find ways to take advantage of the conditions. So I would recommend to anyone who is handicapping a race, I handicap off pen and paper. I've used a lot of Dave's products. I stole a lot of ideas from Dave.
Stole is such an ugly word. Let's try appropriate. It's like plagiarism, right? Plagiarism is the severest form of flattery. But
I read the conditions, make sure I understand the race that I'm looking at. Secondly, I do two quick things that are not really strong handicapping things, but they kind of set the table for the handicapping that follows. One of them is identify the morning line favorite, especially if he's less than 2-1 on the morning line. And I give them a real quick look to see if there's anything that would look suspect, you know, long layoffs, big class drops, just to kind of set my mind before I go into the handicapping part. And the other piece is a real quick pace assessment using a query and speed point kind of a methodology, kind of get an idea if the, if it does look like there's going to be a fast or contested pace. But this is not, I'm not taking this down to feet per second, anything like that. It's just a very high level idea of how the race may play out.
And, excuse me, would yes. you say, so despite the fact that you do keep statistics, but the statistics are about validating your choices, aren't they?
They
I mean, what I'm saying is more about your performance than the game itself.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, my next step of handicapping a race is I use a form of pace, speed figures, and I project for each horse in a race where I believe their speed figure will be. And when I say project that, it's, I'm basing it also off of their prior speed figures, trip notes that I keep. And a lot of trip notes are about the starts of races. I'd say 75% of my trip notes occur at the start, where a horse might get shuffled back a little bit. Nothing too alarming. In fact, unseen to a lot of people, but horses that get out of position at the start to run their best race. I consider distance and surface evaluations and form patterns. But I try to predict a single number for each horse in the race, not including all handicapping angles, but basically, like I said, from the prior speed figures, their age, and I try to always assume improvement or regression off their last.
Okay. So,
speed figure. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Excuse me. No, no. I just needed to ask this. So does the, I came up with something years ago I called campaign theory, where you're looking at the number of races since he's had a layoff and what happens specifically, what happens after he has a more than three length decline. Do you do anything like that with form cycle?
I do. And that is part of this evaluation as well. I will look at first, second, third off the layoff. I am a believer. I know statistics don't bear out when, like, first start off the layoff to second start. My favorite start is third off the layoff. But if you just look at the typical wagering statistics for third off the layoff, they're really not much different than first off the layoff or any other wagering statistics about time off. But I feel that I see not wins, but I feel I see improvement in my figures in that area. And sometimes those figures don't match up to the others in a race, but I feel that I do see improvement. So I build that into my projected number.
Mm. Okay. You know, one of the things when I built the form product that explained that, which Improved Decline is the name of it. And I've re-looked at it, and it was one of those things that, you know, what I found was there were horses that won were typically in form. They showed to be in form. And of course, me having to be, I don't have an artful bone in my body. You, on the other hand, by the way, you would call yourself an artful handicapper, wouldn't you?
Probably, I probably would.
Okay. So back to the campaigns. What I found essentially was, sure, here, let's say here's a race with three horses that have what I call grade A form. They are really likely to improve. And of course, usually two of those are, how would I say it? Two of those are low odds and the other one has no business in the race. And you know what I'm saying? So the form, he might be 20-1 because he's rising three levels and he looks like he's going to improve. but he's probably not well meant today, which means at best he's going to run second or third most of the time. I mean, does that play a part in your handicapping, looking at not only form, but whether or not the horse belongs?
Yes, it does. And I try to build that into, to some extent, into my projection. I started with a number and I tweaked the number based on, you know, trip notes, form patterns, as we were just speaking about. So absolutely it does. And one thing I do, and I kind of learned a little bit from this when I did the graded selections, after I assign a projected number to every horse, I look at the race and handicap it a little bit based on the projected number, running styles, pace setup, and to some extent, jockey trainer influence.
That's where I was going next. I have on my board here, ask about jockeys and trainers. Tell me about that.
The jockey and trainer, what I do is I avoid some very low percentage trainers.
Okay.
It's jockeys, especially when they're on horses that are attracting some money. I'm not drawn to betting the trainer that wins the most races in the meet, because typically the leading trainer, leading jockey are bet heavily as well.
Okay.
I look for opportunities to avoid over betting horses that may have connections that are questionable to me.
So, okay, now, do you actually maintain data on that yourself?
I use the formulator data, Dave.
Okay.
Racing form to demonstrate some statistical information for me.
Mm-hmm.
The circuits I play, I'm pretty familiar with the trainers. And I validate that from time to time through the statistics from the trainer's component of the formulator. But when I'm handicapping an individual race, rarely do I go back and look for a specific, do I do any more from a trainer perspective than look at the relevant statistics that are displayed in the formulator.
Okay. Let me ask you this. I've always had a hard time when you integrating jockey. Now I look at everything from a statistical point of view, and we have some interesting jockey ratings, but we don't really have jockey statistics in our software. It's on my to-do list, has been for a long time. But my question is, see, everything I study about jockeys, it you just can't find any statistics that would indicate this guy is a winner or that guy is a loser or anything like that. Have you been able to look at a, and I guess what I'm asking is the jockey the part that kind of needs to come last?
Jockey is the part that needs to come last. I'm familiar with my circuits that I play, which I think is very important, a very important part of wagering. And I'm also aware of the, well, I'll call them go-to riders. If Steve
day two?
Excuse me?
Did you say day two?
Go-to, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
When certain trainers have horses that they seem to believe they're going to run a good race, they migrate to a certain few jockeys.
Okay.
If you look at trainer statistics, I think for the most part, most of your top trainers, you're going to find that there are two or three jockeys that win the majority of the races.
Mm-hmm.
I pay attention to that. Linda Rice rides Eric Cancel. It doesn't mean the horse can't win, but I know it's not her go-to rider.
You're using the go-to riders, for lack of a better phrase, using that as verification or questionability about whether or not a horse should be included in your play.
It's more of a tiebreaker. What I do is I rank each horse. If there are 10 horses in the race, I rank the horse I think is the most likely to win first through last. So every horse has a rank. I think the benefit of doing that is it makes me look at every horse closely. It's pretty easy to take a quick view of a horse and say, oh, he can't win, throw him out. Well, I try to rank them first through 10th. So I make sure I take a look at each horse in the race and at least consider the chances of the horse running in the top five, in the bottom five, you know, the bottom five, whatever way it may be. It forces me to at least look at each horse, see the positives, see the negatives, and at least do that kind of a evaluation. And the jockeys are more of a tiebreaker for me. Mm-hmm. And if I'm looking at a situation where my top three horses are very close, and I see a situation where the jockey trainer combo may not be ideal, he might be the third choice instead of the first. While I project numbers for every horse, the top projected number is not always my top pick.
Okay. Sure. Where does value fit into this?
Well, I look, as I mentioned earlier, most of my wagers are made in pick threes, pick fours, pick fives. So value is a little harder to determine, but I look for races that I think I have reasonably live morning line horses. For instance, sitting here today is what, August 3rd. I've handicapped New York for tomorrow. In the sixth race, there's a horse that I think has, he's 8-1 on the morning line. And to me, he's a must-use horse. But in the same race, the morning line favorite is also not a, I wouldn't call him a vulnerable favorite by any stretch of the imagination. But I look for opportunities where I see an 8, 10, 12-1 morning line horse that I think is a real must-use horse in the race. And the other part of the value component would be I'm looking for opportunities where I think the morning line favorite is vulnerable and may not even have to be on my ticket. And in those two scenarios, when you're looking at combining best of 2 or 3 or 4 consecutive races, they seem to make the biggest impact on obtaining some value.
Okay, now I want to segue away for just a second.
And sure.
Do you play win bets at all? Do you play exactas, or is it almost all multi-race?
Almost all multi-race. I've probably made a few win bets lately. Well, mine would say lately. I've made a few win bets, but they're in situations like where one of my key horses may be at the end of a pick five sequence, pick four sequence, and I lose a race in the middle of a sequence. And
so you want to recover. You want to get back into the game on your key horse.
Exactly. If I think the horse is, you know, it has some value to it, I'm certainly going to make a win bet on the horse.
Fascinating. Okay. Now I want to go back to the question I've been dying to ask. My experience in the past, having known you for 30 years, or pretty close, you're a master at structuring tickets. Tell us about that.
Okay. I use a method that probably everybody's heard of, and it may sound a little geeky, but I find that it works for me, and I use A's and B's and potentially C's. When I break a race down, I mentioned I rank each horse from first to last in the race. Mm-hmm. And the part of my handicapping that comes right after that ranking is determine if the A's and B's in the race. And that is a judgment call, an artistic call, to some extent from my part. But I may have 1 or 2 A's in each race, 1 or 2 B's in each race. And I've kind of gotten away over the years with a C. Although I still include a crazy C every once in a while, but I pretty much work in the realm of A's and B's. Mm-hmm. And in any sequence that I bet, pick three, pick four, pick five, I evaluate my gut feeling on the overall, how much I like this series. Do I like, if there's a pick five races involved in the series, do I really like 3 of the races? Do I like 1 very well and the others are a little bit of a mishmash? What I'll do is I'll make sure my bet is structured by starting out by saying, okay, in this particular instance, one of my A horses has to win two of the five races. Or three.
Only two. Wow.
Excuse me?
I would have thought you'd expect three A's, but just...
I use three A's often, but I can, you know, in the pick fives, in the pick four, rarely do I use, make a bet where I have to have three A's winning. I'll give you B horses an opportunity to win. Oftentimes, that's where your price is coming from, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I structure my, you know, I'll actually write it down, and I write all my bets down before I plug them into my PC. So I have the numbers. I double check the numbers. I used to get upset with tellers every once in a while when a teller would make a mistake with my bet, and I realized I can make that mistake just as easily.
Yes.
I punched a few bad tickets in, so I'll write the bet down. And normally on a pick four, pick five bet, I'm putting in between 6 and 12 tickets per race. So I might have A with A with A, B, A, B, A, B, you know, and it's through the whole sequence.
Wait a minute, say that slower. So you said A with A, and then over A, like A, B.
A's and B's, yes, A's and B's. I would include both A's and B's in the third, fourth, and fifth, for instance. And then next ticket may be the A in the first with A, B in the second, with just A's in the third, A, B's in the fourth and fifth. To try to make sure that if two, in that particular instance, if two of my A's won in any race in that sequence, I have a good opportunity to hit the ticket.
You know, I like this stuff so much. I think we're kind of running a little short on time here. I would like to do another podcast with you that is all about structuring tickets, because you've taught me something I've never heard before, and I've heard a lot from you over the years, but I never got the idea. If I'm hearing you right, what you're saying is, just like people have strong key horses, you also have strong key races, and they might not be a race where you've got like such a solid A. It might be a race where you've got AABB, and you're very confident that race could be, a catalyst for a big payoff. Yes?
Exactly.
So I would like to segue a bit and then we'll exit here, but I'd like to have you back on so we could do that again. Tell me this, and we've only got a couple of minutes, but what advice can you offer a player who wants to improve their game that does not entail the game taking over their life and keeping statistics? And I mean, obviously you and I both agree you need self-based statistics. That's probably as important as anything. Yes?
That is probably, keep track of what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay.
Track yourself so you know if you're winning or losing. Item number two, even if it's small, try to have a dedicated horse racing bankroll. Don't pressure yourself into dipping into the rent money or the food money in any case. And I would say a disciplined betting methodology. It doesn't have to be fancy. It can be just win bets, one unit, two units, so that you don't overbet in some races. Early in my journey here for horse racing, my biggest losing days, I should say, always followed my biggest winning days.
And is that a psychological thing, do you think?
I was feeling good after having a big day. I had the big day because I was using discipline and selections. And the next day I just went and continued to bet very aggressively. And I can tell you from just the rudimentary record keeping I did back then, my biggest days were always followed by a losing day within the next day or two.
I have a name for that.
Betting too much, yeah.
I have a name for that. I call it walk on water syndrome. You're just crushing it, and you suddenly you think, I've arrived.
Yeah. The other thing I'm going to say is don't be afraid to lose. I know that might sound strange, but I have that written down in my books. Don't be afraid to lose a bet. You're not going to win them all. But I think part of making that palatable is betting within your bankroll, your dedicated bankroll, and betting and not over betting any races.
Do you ever bet outside your norm? I mean, do you ever wind up, whatever it is you're betting, let me make up numbers. Let's say you're putting $100 into races on a consistent basis. Do you ever look at a race and say, ooh, this is worth 200 or 500? Well, I mean, in a pick four, pick three.
Yes. I'm going to say yes, but much more rarely than I used to. The way I manage my betting with unit betting in the session concept, it gives me the option. This race may call for two units, but if I bet three, it's okay. If I lose and I bet three instead of two, my next calculation comes out and probably says bet three units next time. So there's room for that kind of discretion in my methodology, but I found it to be more overrated in my mind than showing good results. I've pretty much now stick to the concept of following my betting method and the number of units it costs for all the time. The only time I would probably stray from that right now, Dave, is if there was a large day like Breeders' Cup Day, mm-hmm. the pools can be very high and the pools can be very juicy, I might step it up a little bit on those days.
I have a hard time on those days, but see, I'm a boring player. You, on the other hand, you would be exciting to hang around. Tony, I need to cut off here. I just wanted to say thank you. This has been a wonderful time. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I hope you'll commit to coming back so we can talk about ticket structuring, and I've got a couple of other things on the agenda as well. So,
Dave, I'd love to come back, and I want to thank you for all you've done for the horse players. I know it's been a business for you, but you've always been somebody that's been very willing to share, and I can tell you've made a big difference in my life.
Oh, I appreciate that so much, Tony. Thank you. And we've counted each other as friends for decades.
Yeah.
So, folks, that's the story. Tony the K, he's the real deal. And you'll be able to catch up with him either on Facebook or through our website. And so I hope you've enjoyed this. And if you have, tell your friends, and otherwise, keep it to yourself.